Okay, Bob, I have to say it's a relief to be talking to you again, and I want you to tell me what's on your mind.
Well, it's always a pleasure here in Maui to Skype with you, Ben. What's on my mind? We missed last week. You were away, but you did send me an email. You accidentally heard one of our shows.
That's right. It was during the summer recess when Resonance FM has 2 weeks in which regular programs are suspended and everything's done in a different order so that people turn on the radio and hear something they wouldn't normally hear. I heard us, and I think I was a little bit tipsy because I couldn't remember anything about it. And I heard it, and I was amazed at how fluent I was, because I do a weekly show, Late Lunch with Out to Lunch on Resonance. I write a script, and one of the things I'm not particularly good at is extempore improvisation, which is somewhat ironic since free improvisation is my favourite form of music, but I find it hard to do, and I was amazed at how fluent you made me.
Well, I do that to people, and what I liked about the email, I knew this because I've re-listened to all the shows, and you commented, you felt that they were surprising, absurd, hilarious. And I agree, it is that, that's why we agree with Scott Norris, who says music is obsolete, Bob and Ben is the best. And we were blowing our horn in show 19, talking about how important our dialogue was. And then you had the pleasure of hearing it, what it sounds like, and it is very interesting, right, what we do. Now, you bring up how I evoke fluency in you. I want to bring on a guest. We had Michael Tenser before, and I am known in Zappology notoriously as someone who claims to have talked to Frank Zappa after he had passed on.
This is usually a no-no in rock criticism, but I was impressed that you got this interview into print.
Yes, and it was a zine called Flipside, and they posted the first interview, and you can go to my website and read the transcript, and then I waited till it was published in Flipside, and then I contacted Frank through the medium known as Michael Blake Reed, and he channeled the Evergreens, and the Evergreens can bring in any dead person, supposedly dead. So I contacted Frank again, and I asked him, what did he think of his fan base's reception to that? And he said, surprisingly, because you wouldn't expect any of his fan base, being secular humanists, that they would be interested in the psychic world. But he said a lot of them cherished it, cut it out, and pasted it on albums. Now, he's telling me this through the medium, Michael Blake Reed. And I said, what did Gail think of it? And he said, Gail knew it was real, but couldn't believe that there was an ability to contact the dead Zappa. So she decided that I and Jerry Fialka had cut and paste an obscure, unpublished interview with Zappa together to make that. I bring that up just to say that it even seemed real to Gail. And the only person who actually heard the tape of it is, who did Being Frank? I forget her name.
Nigel Lennon.
Nigel Lennon heard the audio, and she thought it was Frank because Frank mixed up Rites of Spring. Whatever the real title of Stravinsky's Rites of Spring is, singular or plural, Frank always said it wrong, and he mentioned it in the channeling in the wrong way. So Nigel found that significant, that it was Frank saying it the wrong way like he did when he was alive.
Oh.
So we had two confirmations of the reality of Frank coming through. Then you read the interviews, and I enjoyed the fact that you thought you didn't know where it came from and didn't care. You just found the ideas were worth reading, and that's important. And so I now have a new medium. I don't have the Evergreens. They stopped channeling through Michael Blake Reed. We have a new medium that we call Ion, who apparently is zillions of entities who speak through JW. And I've had conversations with Zappa through Ion since I started talking to Ion on March 18th. And so since you're interested in the quality of information we can get through this means, I have brought Ion here. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon.
Good. Ion is there. Ben, you begin asking what you want of any Zappa related or Marx. We can talk to Karl Marx, Marshall McLuhan, Zappa. You begin what you would say to Frank. If you assume this is Frank, what would you say to Frank right now? Ben.
Well, yeah, I'm at a loss for words. I mean, normally you make me fluent, but this task is making me dry up, actually. Let me begin. I find it hard to think of asking a dead person a question, because death is precisely, for me, where you can't ask anybody any questions anymore. That's the difference. You can go on asking somebody while they're alive.
That's a very interesting concept that we would like to embrace from the beginning place, which is kind of fun. You speak in your world, being human, that you have a finite amount of space or time that you engage in this plane, the plane in which you're living now. However, there's a larger concept. Some of the Christian beliefs even go in so far as to say that there is eternal life. Well, that's more truer than you know. In the physicalness of what you call meat sack, blood, guts, body, hair, teeth, functioning, the only way the coroner can tell that you've expired is that when your non-physical separates from your body. But that non-physical still is. So those that have the recently departed, or we jokingly call them the quiet undead, still have the ability and capacity to communicate to such a degree or parameter if the human has the capacity to hear.
Well, this is true of everybody all the time anyway, in the sense that the human culture that we have is created by people who are no longer here, and we're spouting it. So I translate your rather dualistic Christian-based metaphysic, which has a separation of the body and the soul, into my understanding of what it is to speak. That I don't think when we speak we are able to do so simply as expressions of our individual meat sack, that we are social beings and every utterance is social. And therefore, when you speak, you're summoning up the activities and work that societies that you've come from, that is your provenance, that you are mobilizing all that every time you speak. So I don't have the idea that somehow I need a special fix to put me in touch with the dead, because the dead are alive every time I speak.
Marvelous. That's a great embracing. Not everyone embraces that same candor, however. But yes, that is a very marvelous place to have the ability and capacity to go outside that which has been relatively established. We have fun with science because they spend all day, every day, trying to uncreate. And that's the only thing that is the part that they can't dismiss or dispel into the ether somewhere. So it's a very delightful place of embracing a different type or another concept within your conscious beingness. And that's very interesting, because the conscious part is the part that you resonate with, or you can dispel. You can say, I'm not having it and I'm good. But as you embrace what you call quantitative thought, then the rules and the regulations that you will allow to come into your experience is the predecessor of your reality that you embrace or try to undo.
But Ion, Ben is saying, and I've used this idea, that when I speak, the collective thinking, the collective speaking, what goes into the English language is in the words. And this is what Joyce was showing in Finning His Wake. The embedding of meanings from Middle English and Old English and Latin and way back is in our speech. So in this world, we are communicating with the dead just by using language. Now, how would you qualify what we're saying there?
Well, but it's just the embracing. But if you pushed against the process that there is no non-physical, and that all the language is predicated on Noah Webster, the lexicographer's dimensional view of what a word means, that it can't change or evolve, as your humans seem to do, then it comes into a very interesting place of how do you fit things that don't fit into this dichotomy of embracing non-physical through speech.
But Ion, this historical materialism of language that I'm proposing is all about evolution and change. It understands that what I'm speaking is changing the language as I'm saying it, that I am putting my specific twist on the words I'm using, and this helps them evolve and alters them, damages them, twists them, and this is passed on to the future. So the idea that, I mean, it depends which dictionary you look at, but if you take, for example, the famous Oxford English Dictionary, it's based on historical principles, and if you consult that a lot, you get very far away from the idea that dictionaries simply limit and define language. They trace a movement which has happened to words, which can be substantiated by quotation, but it gives you the idea that words are extremely flexible, often are used to mean their opposites. And you look at the real history of words, the malleability of words is quite astonishing. And I suppose my total philosophy is this historical materialism that has room for change. And that's what I would propose to you versus something which sounds like a religious promise of some kind of world beyond my understanding. That this move in philosophy to say, well, I am explaining to you something which is beyond our understanding, for me is toxic. It's the death of real thinking. It produces a paradox which can't be resolved. And it seems to me that every huckster in the realm of philosophy and religion has used this device. And the problem is it's boring, because it can't explain by reference to the real world. It can't go out and investigate and get replies, because it's always got the consciousness that the real thing will always escape you.
Well, isn't that interesting? So shall we play with that and see how it works out?
Yes.
Please, yeah.
We typically like to engage in questions because we answer from the non-physical place, from your physical, because you have a non-physical as well, and that's what you were speaking about so eloquently, to allow the change of your creation with the manipulation of thought, known patterns, or word imagery that changes the entire dynamic of the dialect. Speak to the Welsh and you'll have a different conversation, obviously, and yet communication can still be achieved on the basic premise of your wanting to understand.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is rather like the sleeve notes of Ornette Coleman's Dancing in Your Head, sleeve notes which were suppressed in the digital release of Dancing in Your Head in 1977, yeah, where he claimed that you could understand any music in the world by responding to it and dancing to it, that by an active taking part in it, you become part of it, and therefore the idea of understanding music as some kind of headache, which has been proposed by many people arguing for the complete separation of human cultures, that you as a Westerner will never get to the bottom of this music played in Indonesia and so on, these arguments. Ornette Coleman took that head on and said something quite similar to what you're saying, I think.
Yes. Yes, because we engage all aspects, because that's really the only time there is the metered note. There is no time as it was created by humans. With the lack of time, the only time is the metronome's version of a timing between the lines and spaces in the lyrical rote music.
Yes, is this music of the spheres, which is backing up your contributions to the discussion, is it? Does it always happen when you speak?
When we are engaged,
right?
When we are engaged, it becomes a open window,
right?
How this all sort of came about, of course, with Bob.
And does this occur when you're, you know, buying gas at the gas station? You know, does it freak people out, or does it only occur at these high level discussions?
No, Ben. Let me say something, Ion. Is that where Ion, the vehicle that Ion's coming through, known as JW, lives? There's a train that comes by several times a day.
Many of our
recorded discussions, we have the train coming by. It just happens to be coming by there now.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, yeah. And it sounds like the music of the spheres. I have to tell you, we're not dealing with visuals, but as I'm concentrating on what you're saying, the children had left a black crayon and a yellow crayon, and I've been kind of moving them across the paper, and I'm finding all kinds of flames and florid spirit pictures, rather like William Blake, are appearing under my fingers, and I don't know whether it's the influence of the train or the stimulation of talking to two disembodied voices, but that's what's happening under my fingers just now.
Bob, have you got the colors, black and pink, orange, whatever, red, are on our website for ION.
Right.
So you actually got the right colors.
It's yellow and black. It's yellow and black at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we got on our website, plus some red and pink. But ION, respond. I was saying the sounds of the train, but you seemed to say it was something else, ION, I think.
Yes, the dynamic of your doodle.
Yeah.
What was the picture image that you were summoning that you're translating into your form of paper?
Mm.
The thought.
Yeah.
ION can see that, Ben. Yeah. You may not believe it, but ION, take a look at what he's doodling. What do you see in it?
Well, the yellow kind of goes up in converse and concave swirls, and then the black seems to define where the yellow comes into play. But you need some planar lines to get a line of demarcation so you can sort out the evil ones among you.
Well, it's accurate, and it's accurate.
Well, that's
because
pretty good ESP, right?
Well,
here
yeah,
on the show,
yeah,
Ben.
Yeah. Well, this is the traditional way in which you destroy someone's sense of their purposive action by showing that they are in fact automata. So if you understand anything about drawing, you know that black is a supreme color, and you can try and avoid it, and it's very interesting to try and do many drawings where you're not going to use black as a definer, and Iron's aware of that, in the same way as the gypsy fortune teller is aware that people encounter each other and have sexual encounters, something which a lot of people who go and see gypsies don't really admit to themselves. So once one has these a few basic percepts like that at one's call, one can, I wouldn't say bamboozle people, but you can give them a sense of huge revelations which make them believe in the uncanny. But I hold on to the fact that these perceptions are in fact quite common or garden, although they're often pushed under in various cultures and need to be reasserted, which is why visiting a gypsy fortune teller can in fact be beneficial to repressed people. But I suppose I would claim that the way Bob and myself have been talking, Ion, and the explicitness with which we've referred what are the things like drawing or sex and so on, actually makes us rather independent of being shattered by such observations.
Well,
is that? Maybe you didn't want to shatter me. I mean, I maybe
define shatter.
To give one to think that you're no longer in control of your person.
Oh, but you are always only in control of your person.
Well, I'd say most of the time one's carrying out functions which the idea of being in control doesn't suit. That we have a notion of being in control, but actually our needs and our behaviour is necessarily part of something in which our conscious mind doesn't want to be in control and shouldn't be in control.
And yet when your bladder fills, you will move to the urge to go after a bit of time, will you not?
Yeah, ineluctably.
Indeed.
Mm.
Okay. The dynamic of this embracing what we are trying to, and always every day, begin and continue on, is that you have a three-part in each human physical creator. There is a three-part scenario, and that part is, one, is the physical. You have natural urges. If you have hunger, if you have pain, if you have disdain, whatever is in your physicalness that you're looking upon as what is, then you also have a non-physical part. Now, and it has nothing to do with religion, because religion has undone more of human creativity than anything that we ever know, have ever been exposed to. But if it causes contrast to make you think outside the box, then it can allow you into an epiphany of knowledge, understanding, wisdom, and you can use that as the sounding board to bounce off of.
Well, I feel that that may be true up until the French Revolution, and then it becomes untrue.
All right. Then that's from the sieving of the mind. So you have the physical, you have the non-physical, and then you have the fulcrum, or the balancing place in your mind, that allows you to weigh it out, to calculate it, to accept it or discredit it, that then you can then come to a new place of knowing. This technology that you're using and to have this conversation would be nonsensical. That you have a little plastic box and you have someone else across the world and someone else in another part of the world, and all engaging in the same conversation, talking to these little bits of plastic that are plugged into the wall, but in no other way connected in any way, shape, or form, and actually having engaging conversation regarding any hypothetical dynamic that is at your fingertips of leisure to engage. And ask some questions and let's play.
Okay, I have a question, Ion. When I talked to James Joyce through Ion, developed what the Evergreens had told me, that James Joyce was interested in the psychic and attended many gypsies. I would like to know if Zappa pursued any oracular psychic phenomena in his youth or at any point in his life. Can Ion fill us in on, or can have Frank have an answer?
Specifically, Mary Ann was a channeled entity that he favored.
And where, how young was he when he first engaged with Mary Ann?
23.
Now, I know his sister Candy is psychic. I don't know if she manifested that when she was young, but how did Frank encounter this?
Wait a second. Hold the phone. Everyone is psychic, Bob. It's a gift. Everyone, you're only using this mind that Ben is so keen on, you're only using 5-7% of it, so the rest is just laying fallow for better weather. So everyone has the ability and capacity to engage concepts within their mind, within their knowing, within their place of being, to become more. They all long and desire for these impossible dreams, and then they cry and they hope they'd wished for so much more. Just because the engagement has not been aligned with their understanding that they can embrace doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means it's not been adapted within the individual human creator. So your words and definitions are kind of superfluous when you start coming back to the place of, is it real for me or is it a bunch of hooey?
But if we're all psychics, then who's doing the kicking?
You are.
Ah, yeah. Well, you see, I like that. I have a problem with your idea of the physical, because your idea of the physical excludes movement, excludes autonomous activity, whereas I believe the atoms swerve. So I think we don't need a mover from outside. We don't need a spirit. I find your dualism unacceptable. I can't think like that, that you're trying to redress a balance in a way that actually confirms the deadness of the matter that the metaphysics of Christianity attributes to it, saying that the spark, the soul, must come from the outside. And it seems to me you're agreeing with that, whereas I believe matter is self-organizing. I believe in evolution. I think that matter, that the crystals, can form something called life. I don't believe there's some gap or some kind of mystery that needs to intervene. And I find you seem to be running away from the insights of Darwin and Freud and Marx. You seem frightened by the possibilities of these materialist understandings of the world, because you've actually accepted the wrong philosophy of matter in the first place.
But then you'd have to engage that there is indeed antimatter in order for Cambridge to establish that there is indeed matter.
Well, I think we could leave Cambridge out of it. I mean, I mean, antimatter is, yeah, I mean, to draw upon these concepts which physicists need in order to describe the world is possible, but I think us, you know, pulling on them in that way is you know, is trivial.
Okay, Ben, now ion, I think, does present the dualist and the trialist, the physical, non-physical, and the mind. But I find that in action, in practice, the non-physical is so involved with the physical that there is no separation. Maybe ion could correct me or clarify or develop what I just said.
Those are perfect words. How does the coroner know who to bury and who not to bury?
The coroner.
The coroner.
The coroner. Oh, the coroner. Oh, right. Well,
who makes that judgment?
Well, the coroner does.
Well, what gives him the power and authority to decide that you've eternally left your physicalness?
The state.
Oh, so now it's the government's job to tell whether or not I'm alive?
No, he meant the state of the body.
I mean the state. Well, I don't say it's the government's job. I'm just saying it does it. I'm not saying I approve of it or disapprove of it. I'm just describing what the coroner does.
Are there those within your human functioning that have mobility, they're agile, they're visceral? Are there those who have ceased their biological function, deceased, croaked, dead, gone, and come back from that experience?
Well, we all watch television once in a while, don't we?
And?
Yeah, well, it seems to me that while people are watching television, they're actually leaving the possibility of acting and behaving in a independent human way. They're, in fact, spiritually dead.
No, we're speaking of physically dead.
Yeah, okay. Near-death experiences is what
I'm saying. No, not near-death. Stone cold gone.
Okay. Well, I think when you're dead, you're dead.
And
you know,
then they come back.
It's
on record that they come back, you're saying.
Well, that's what the defibrillator's for, is to jumpstart the heart back to beating, is it not?
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, it corresponds to all sorts of things I understand in life. You know, things dip under the water and come out again. I mean, it'd be odd if it didn't. I mean, I don't find it shocking. It'd be shocking if that weren't true. I mean,
yes, indeed.
Things come and go, don't they? And they go up and down, and they're a bit and a lot. And I'd expect things to behave like that.
In the human creator, in physical, that's agile, that moves, that's self-sustaining, always evolving, never changing, always completing, always hopefully making better, maybe not, but the contrast that is generated from the agile, visceral human allows them the ability to then choose and embrace sometimes new ideas, just as your spirit-filled language from your human physical speaker is recorded, then those creations are your very own, and they are very appropriate, and we're not here to push against anything, but in that same level of degree that you then undo the meaning of words, or the meaning of life, or the life of Riley, or the... what is it, the stairway to heaven, or the highway to hell, I guess, is some of the musicians play with. Then you come back to a new concept in a place of who will provide the grand design of which creation is yours and which is mine.
No, I don't get to that question at all. It seems to me this is entirely something driven by religion.
No, Ben,
intuitively,
let me respond to that point.
Yeah, well, is it a point? It seems to me more an assertion of a particular mentality needing certain crutches in the world, celebrating those crutches. I can't see it as a point. It seems to me an assertion of certain psychic needs, which seem to me in need of psychoanalysis and cure.
Interesting.
Ion, I think you were going to it's an assertion, not a point, Ben's saying. It's an assertion that you're making.
Then let's go at it this way. Rather than assert our non-physical beingness, why don't you, Ben, and your human condition, ask questions specific that require answers, and let us answer, and then you gauge your place of understanding from that place of your question.
Well, the strangest thing, Ian, is that when I hear you talking and the environment you set up, I find I can't think of anything to, you know, that asking a question is the last thing in my mind, that I have a whole load of objections and irritations and wanting to point out various developments that have materially happened to this society that have made us reach this point. And I don't find, you know, the asking thing coming up in my mind, and it's puzzling me, and I'm trying to think, when do I ever feel like asking anything? Well, what is asking anyway? I'm kind of, maybe I only do axing, you know, maybe I'm just a hatchet man or something, but it's quite shocking to me. You're making me reflect that asking is not, you know, it's not intuitively close to how I behave. I mean, Bob, do I ask you things? Do you ask me things?
No, we don't. You do polite openers, and we have 19 hours of proof that you have a lot to assert and can't even take in anything that I'm saying too accurately. You do like to be fluent. Now, your alibi is I make you fluent. But no, you don't ask. You state. You assert.
Okay.
But you assert constantly.
Surely when you ask, you have to be convinced that the person giving the answer has, you know, there's some help that they're going to give you. I mean, presumably I ask complete strangers the way a lot of the time if I'm lost, you know. I certainly
ask. Let Ion respond to that.
Okay.
Not necessarily. You can't ask from the position of what is the opinion that you're going to dispel without even engaging in what it's about. That's sort of like the scientist. So the only thing that's created is what the scientists say isn't a reality.
But I'm afraid I don't, you know, bear this great grudge against science that you seem to bear. You know, I have my criticisms of Descartes and the empirical method and the amount of Christian metaphysics smuggled into science by Descartes, and I object to that, and I've campaigned against it and tried to make people read Herman Samuel Reimarus or Giambattista Vico who fought with Descartes' ideas long ago.
Your
assumption, I mean, you seem to be in an environment where it's okay to diss science, and I'm not sure I'm with you on that at all.
Good. Very good. Did you ask them to read the new work?
Which new work?
The work that you're using to set your premise or platitude of completeness.
One asks anybody one can. I mean, spreading ideas is a difficult process. One's not immediately in touch with all the people. You don't immediately swing everything in the direction you'd like, do you? You have to get quite used to failure and obscurity in dealing with ideas.
What is the new work you're referring to, Ion?
He was saying the empirical evidence that he would push against, he would suggest that enlightened ones engage in other works that might help them get to a place where they can clean up their problems. And we wanted to know how he went about doing that from a standpoint of, did you ask them to consider reading yet another work, another point of view?
Yes. I mean, I also realize that that has its... that we're under the cosh of a system in philosophy in the Anglophone world where imports from the defeated revolution in Paris from 1968, known as structuralism, postmodernism, are ruling ideas. It's very difficult to question those or to disagree with them. They flood across. The French government pays for translations of all this stuff, and the average common sense of the educated person is flooded with this stuff. So opposing it is not an easy task. It seems to be a business of working quite underground to develop ideas that resist all this these sets of ideas. But I wouldn't, you know, take my stand against science in the way that you do with such confidence. I find it quite shocking that you sound as if no one ever questions you on that. I mean, is that the case? All the people who consult you all agree with you that science is obviously such a terrible thing?
Oh, we don't see it as terrible at all. We see it as delicious. It provides the human, individual human, soulless human being as a balancing point of contrast.
Mm.
Of contrast. And then the individual human gets to sieve that through their mind, through the labyrinth of the mind that allows them to basically embrace or not the newest, hottest creed. The same scientist you would have been drawn and quartered if you disagreed with a scientist of the day that said that the world was flat.
But the newest, hottest, you seem to be confusing science with consumerism. I mean, I've got different terms, maybe.
Okay. Maybe.
But the idea of science is...
What would be your definition of science?
Well, I'm having to guess. I mean, you know, we could take it back and say, well, science is simply knowledge, and in the olden days it wasn't split between knowledge of the human and knowledge of nature and so on. But in common parlance now, science is usually means the hard sciences, which means something you can prove by experiment, doesn't it? The empirical method, as laid out by Descartes, who I mentioned before, that's what science is. It's something, and therefore when it comes to social issues or sexual issues, they're getting, and psychological issues, they're getting a complete confusion, because we are dealing with things which are absolutely unique. Every occurrence of a psyche is unique, and therefore there aren't you can't generalize, and therefore you can't do the kind of experiments, or at least they're not sensible. I mean, the whole of academic psychiatry is complete nonsense. It doesn't produce any empirical results. Likewise, sociology. So
there's very little difference between genius and schizophrenia if you look at the definition.
Well, Bob, do I have to listen to such gym track excuses for thinking?
No, he's pointing it out. You know that a lot of your points in your writing is to point out there's a fine line between genius and schizophrenia. You schizoanalysis is a very term you use for material.
No,
study.
It's a term I criticize. That's Gilles Deleuze's particular approach to things. Deleuze,
right,
and Guattari invented schizoanalysis, and in fact, I'm deeply opposed to it.
Right. So, but you do recognize that what society thinks is nutty, like Frank Zappa or James McDougall, is often very creative in your terms.
Yeah, I mean,
schizophrenia.
There's a lot of contradiction, and there's a war going on. Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a war happening in which the things that I believe in are dissed as nonsense. That's true, but that doesn't mean that I believe that nonsense is close to sense.
Well, that's okay. I agree with you there.
I mean, you know, I'd like a way of understanding what gets categorized as nonsense if I respond to it and believe in it and understand why this stuff is dissed. I want explanations rather than a kind of consoling thought that actually nonsense and sense are very close together. I'd like specific answers, which maybe I could ask Ion, which is,
yeah,
why does all this nonsensical philosophy come from Paris?
Well, it doesn't. It's just where you're hearing it from.
Okay, so it can come from anywhere.
Certainly. And that's what scientists use to form their hypothesis to decide if it's credible or incredible.
Mm.
They use what, Ion?
The nonsensical notions that are floating about from the human,
yeah,
creator.
Mm.
That's right.
Tell me, I have got a question I want to ask, Ion. Which is, what's is the relation of Charles Fort to your particular way of approaching things?
Well, it's limited because it doesn't embrace full concepts. It has to be from a sighted position of what is. It doesn't allow the onslaught of questioning and embracing and engaging topical information that can open paradigms to change qualifiers that can open up a whole new level or degree of a concept that may or may not be embraceable.
So the Fortean spends his whole time clipping newspapers and never writes a poem, is that what you're saying?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I'm amazed that Ion knows who Charles Fort is, but I find that Ion knows a lot of things. And I want to get this point in before we end. You say that Zappa, his favorite spirit...
Who's you? Sorry, is you me, Ben Watson, or Ion?
No, I want to address Ion, finish this point.
Okay.
Ion says that Zappa's favorite entity that he spoke to through a meeting was named Mary Ann. I was wondering, I'm assuming, okay, Ion is saying that Zappa consulted mediums or people who claim to be mediums. Did he get a confidence, an assurance on his career when he was young from one of these mediums that he would get quite global attention? Did he seek that?
No, he did not. He used that engagement with a non-physical entity to undo, he didn't want to be famous. He wanted to be on the leading edge of the rabble rouser that caused everybody to second guess everything that was.
Fantastic, that's accurate. Now, he was seeking from the psychic realm how to do that?
How to be an anarchist.
But was it a psychic? Why is it Marianne? Is it marijuana?
No, that's Mary Jane.
okay, yeah, all right.
That's true. Now, so what did Marianne advise him?
Basically answering his questions. He did question everything, and he sought answers from almost everyone or anyone. Now, he didn't embrace them all, but those that he could embrace then became the leading edge in his human reality, through the sieving of the labyrinth of his mind, that allowed him the contrast to go, well, okay, if this is good, then let's do some more. Well, if they didn't understand that, good, let's write another one. Well, if this didn't hit the charts, then that's great. I really didn't want him to get it anyway. And the next thing you know, he dies stone cold famous as just the leading edge of all of creation. And we're so many years later now even still chatting about the historical references of his beingness.
So he failed his mission to be not famous.
Innocuous, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, I found it interesting when I talked to Frank through Ion a few months ago. Frank was saying through Ion that he was very unhappy with his music. Could you tell Ben a bit about that?
Yes, just the there was never a congealing. It's like if you make a terrain, it would never come out. In his world, it was never appropriate. It was never enough. There was never enough rifting. There was never enough key changes. There was never enough. No one could keep up with him. And he didn't like what he was coming out with. So the furthest he could go, the stranger he could become, the closer he was getting to what he was trying to convey through his musical muse or an artisan position to have folks question everything that they can then embrace or not, but not be put into the mold that because this is, that has to be what I am.
Right, and why did he, in his story on Cletus Arritus, have the questions be punished in the Roman scenario? Do you know that particular...
It was going against specifically the meme that said, if you didn't fit into this caliper, then you were excluded. And so he said, great, I'll exclude myself, and in exclusion became his own niche marketplace.
What do you think of that, Ben? Did you sense any familiarity with your understanding of Frank and what Ion is saying?
Yeah, but it also applies to John Cale or Andy Warhol or, I mean, these paradoxes just riddle modern art. I'm not sure it's really... hit Zappa
okay,
on the
so
head for me.
I understand, Ben. So let me say this. Now, the Evergreens, I think they told me that this era, you know, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, will be known as the Zappa era when history comes back or when history looks at it far enough down the line. Do you see Zappa having some historical significance in musicological history, or will he be forgotten? How does Ion see that?
Well, no, it wouldn't be forgotten. I mean, you're still talking about him now, so... the chances of that being an unestablished memeable reality seems to thwart the very process that would disconnect you from him. So,
well, do you see Zappa as being acknowledged as a very influential character in the 60s and 70s, more than maybe the mainstream acknowledges now? Will that be a situation in the future?
Yes, once the developed mind embraces those larger concepts that would actually bring them to a focused place of asking a question, and rather than just stating their transcendental positions, then yes, that would be more and more in line with what he was trying to establish as a difference, a different way of thinking about it, a larger perspective that could be your reality if you so embraced it.
Right. That's what I mean when I say that Zappa was not limiting himself to the concept of being a musician, that he was a philosopher and he engaged concepts of physics in that. Could you comment on what Frank was doing in his music with the concept of the big note?
Questioning everything.
And why did he call it a big note as some kind of unifying singularity?
Well, because it was the perfect note that he could never seem to achieve.
I don't think so. I think he introduces the idea of the big note as a way of talking about the totality. Because in the culture that he grew up in, I think the dominant ideas are those of pragmatism. And talking about the totality is something that people find very hard, and or they resort to God or religion to do it. And so a serious philosophical attempt to imagine the whole in a materialist sense is very hard to maintain in America. And I think when Zappa talks about the big note, that's the idea he's trying to put across. And I find it very, very strange to try and use Zappa as part of this attack on science and this...
There's no attack going on in science.
Well, when you say... I was picking up on the tone of voice that Ian used about science, and then, of course, he turns it around and says, no, it has a place, and it's rather like talking to you, Bob, that within people who've worked out systems, there's always like, well, I'm never against anything because everything has its place, and I believe... But up till when I introduced that point, I thought you could go back and listen to it. And it was the usual stuff on conspiracy theory websites and all the rest of it. The science, they're the enemies. They're the spoiling our fun, coming along and looking at things scientifically. You know, we want to indulge our adolescent fantasies to the fullest extent. And we object to anyone coming along and saying this is this and that is that, because it gets in the way of being spoiled kids. And I diagnose that as part of where Ion's coming from. And it's a resistance to history, and it's generalising. And so my point about what he's saying about Zappa not being that interesting, because you could apply it to John Cale or Andy Warhol, or in fact any modern artist, including ones which Frank Zappa is actually diametrically opposed to, blobs everything into some kind of non-understanding. So okay, I have to say, Bob, okay, I mean, you've introduced Ian. I'll just finish. I'm going to let you wrap up. We've got another 12 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm going to bow out the conversation now and just say that it didn't work for me, Bob. And
it's okay if it doesn't work. There are listeners. But yeah. I want to say this. Let's get a particular about Zappa. I think Simon Prentice showed me something about the isotope. I'd like to ask Ion why Zappa emphasized the isotope as a metaphor for the toads of the short forest. That was the name of the song. I want to get a particular here, Ben. Ion, why was Frank, or Frank is there with you, why did he call the isotope as an important element in the meaning of the title, Toads of the Short Forest?
Because it once again pointed out that there was more than the human dogma, that's what you want to use, or any words you please, to use to point out again that as you are complete, you are not complete. And here's yet another example of how there can be more, always eternally and completely.
The isotope is a physical concept that echoes that?
It was something that no one understood from his dimensional expression.
Right.
Now,
I know that, and I have done many sessions with Ion on physics and science. Ion is not against science. Ion is sneers and makes fun of the average science and their conventional view of things, and then how science changes, and and people don't notice that the conventional experts became obsolete so quickly. Isn't that slightly what your point is, if Ben Sayu's negative on science?
Oh, yes. We think it's wonderful because it makes you ask questions. And that's the one thing Ben doesn't want to do. He wants to make statements. So as the scientist, puts you in a place to where you actually question and you want to get some information and have topics that you can sift through your own mind with your own non-physical and your own physical. And then you play that music for yourself. And if you can embrace it, then it's delicious. And if you can't, then it makes you ask why. And if it makes you ask why, it makes you more complete, which then that certainly would evolve your evolution. And it may cause a revolution, but it mostly embraces your potential capacity to evolve into a higher state of being.
Right, Ben. What do we got? Fooey. 1 minute, Ben?
Fooey on higher states of being. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what we got? 1 minute.
And I find it very odd to base that on Frank Zappa. I mean, you know, higher states
of
being.
Well, that wasn't, no, that he was addressing you, Ben. Do we have 1 minute? What's the time limit?
We've got another 4 minutes.
Oh, okay, another 4 minutes. I like, Ben makes statements. He doesn't ask questions. And I know Ben is into questioning, but the way Ben comes across is he makes assertions, and you're the one, Ben, who criticizes the scientists and the pomos and the this and the that, you're very irritated
by
it.
Well, Bob, there is a lot of these issues have been dealt with, and it's kind of this assumption that the polite way of behaving is to pretend that none of this has been thought through and positions reached and solved and moved on, that you've got to become a sort of wide-eyed, gibbering twit in order to be polite to other people. I find idiotic. And
who is saying that, Ben?
I find iron soul philosophy of asking questions. I mean, who are you asking the question of? If you don't respect the person, don't think they can tell you anything, why ask them a question? I mean, you're not going to get
right,
much from them.
That's why I'm here to ask the question, since you don't have the respect for Ion. That's okay. Ion's not asking for your respect. He was brought on. So I'm asking a question of Ion. And since Ben is bowing out of that, that's okay. Ion, so Zappa struggled hard to get the perfect big note. Did he die early because of his frustration, or his dying early had nothing to do with that? Or, as Ion says, every suicide was a death, and why did he, every death is a suicide, why did he do it? Maybe that's too many questions. Go ahead, Ion. Too many questions? Is Ion there?
I think Ion may have gone.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be on, so he might have got disconnected somehow.
Oh, what a relief. Well, you win some, okay. Lose some. I just couldn't get on with Ion. I'm sorry, Bob. I tried. I really tried. But this idea that I've got to become, lose everything that I'm actually saying or the criticisms that I've heard of things in order to talk, it's a kind of move which just asks you to cancel yourself out. I mean, it's the Zen master. You know, the problem with you is you assert. But what I'm asserting, he's not answering. He's not saying, well, this is wrong. I can prove it to me. You know, I mean, if I'm wrong, then tell me so. I mean, all conversations assertion. If you don't assert, you never get a conversation. If we all go around just stroking each other and asking questions.
Okay, now Ion's calling me. Let me just...
And Bob's gone off. Ion's gone off. And it's just me. Oh, Ion's coming back for the last minute and a half. Well, shall I answer? Okay, I'll answer.
Now, every third word was dropping on your world.
Okay, but Ben, are you there?
I am, yeah. I've survived.
Okay, Ion is back. Ion is back. Ion hooked us back in. Ion said that every third word was dropping, so that's why he got knocked off.
Okay.
So we probably got a few...
We're nearing the end, Ion, so I'll let you close out the program. We've just got 45 seconds to go, but you can close it if you want to, would.
It's very delicious and very wonderful to engage with human creators. We love to play from non-physical. We love the enjoyment. It is your contrast that is wonderful because it's how you evolve. Otherwise, evolution would cease, creation would stop. And then you would undo all creation, which is an impossibility. Therefore...
Yeah. Oh, he went. So, Ben, I would say that you were the perfect respponent to Ion. Ion loves contrast. He likes your negative dialectics. And
okay, well, I'm very glad to hear it. Thank you very much, Ion, and thank you very much, Bob Dobbs. This is Ben Watson saying goodbye to both of you. Program's over. See you next week. Bye.